Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 39, Lower Decks, Season 1, Episode 3, Temporal Edict.
Permission to speak freely?
You always speak freely. Nobody can stop you from speaking freely.
All right, you know what you've got going on? You have broad shoulders and shiny hair and you talk a good game, but when it comes to actually doing the job, you don't have it. I'm calling bullshit on your whole thing here, sir.
You're so busy breaking protocol that you never look ahead. One of these days you're gonna get someone killed, Ensign.
With all due respect, sir, my friends aren't trapped in an alien prison. Your team is.
That's not my team. It's our team. But I guess you don't think that way.
Got all that out. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. Isn't that crazy?
You should start again. Let's all start again.
Yeah, just for the fun of it. Just walk. We can hang out.
hang out and smoke cigarettes.
Outside, be all cold.
Like the old days.
We can get like... I was going to say we could get sick and still smoke anyways because you like smoke on a cold when it tastes all nasty.
Yeah,
still
you do it anyway, even though it's terrible.
Yeah, it's an addiction.
Yeah. So this episode of Star Trek LD was...
LD.
Season 1, Episode 3.
Temporal Edict.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny because when I saw the name of the episode...
Right.
Obviously, this was the intention, was the presumption there would be some form of time travel... shenanigans going on.
Yeah, and at the end he just like kind of like locks in that they're just making fun of that. Boimler goes, clocks, time, schedules. You guys are under the strict scheduling too? It's like, you think it's like some kind of time thing. So like made it seem like this time travel episode near the end. And plus there's all these crystals everywhere. Like, what's the deal with all the crystals?
Time crystals.
Those
people
right.
were really into crystals and they didn't like wood.
Yeah, they were super against wood.
Some kind of weird redneck alien.
It was a sex wood. Right? Wasn't it some kind of...
That's what they were
fertility
saying.
Symbol, yeah.
Yeah.
Fertility symbol, yeah. So they were presented. They
were offended by a dirty wood.
What about the beginning of this episode? Did you enjoy the opening teaser?
Fertility totem.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
For Movac Prime. Mavok Prime. Okay, sorry, I just had to get that out. the beginning where he had that future violin, and his two songs he played were Essence... And which is a song about his mom, and Requiem for a Hug.
That was also about his mom.
Yeah. And then Mariner just like rocked out, and like the audience was displeased either way.
And the green chick was playing drums.
In both cases, the audience was being polite. Clearly, they were not enjoying either Boimler's weird future violin concerto thing or the loud music that Mariner and Tendi were doing. But they were being good Starfleet officers.
Like when Data reads poetry.
Yeah, exactly. Like precisely.
And some of them are kind of like,
all right, but we're here.
Yeah. And they'll clap all, oh, good job.
And when the Klingon goes like, what is the meaning of this intense bass? It's funny, but I was also like, I don't know. It's kind of
right.
What's the meaning of this intense bass?
And then he
bass?
Tells like that guy, he's going to die today or something.
It's like, yeah, it's like some kind of joke. This intense bass. I don't know. But I guess that's true, though. What was the meaning of all that bass? No. And they're like, it was on your end, buddy.
Yeah. It was a bit silly.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. It's fine.
The ship, the opening I noticed this time, originally I thought that the Serratos fired at that Borg ship and then left after firing one shot. Uh-huh. And I realized, no, the Borg fired on it once.
Oh,
and then it turns around.
Yeah.
And then it's got some kind of like Lovecraftian sucko monster on the warp nacelles.
Yeah.
That actually first reminded me
Lovecraftian sucko monster.
Yeah, that's the bad guys in Mass Effect were called Reapers and they lifted that from Lovecraft. So that's first what came to mind. And then I was like, you know, it goes before that. That was a cool thing, right? How big is a warp nacelle, you think? Like, that's what that was, right?
They're pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the ship, but, you know, it's still pretty big on a ship, even that size.
Which movie was it? There was a movie where they went on the dish in that shooty.
In First Contact.
That was First Contact.
Yeah.
They went on the dish. And
then the Borg are all trying to attack them.
Yeah. And those awesome boots they have.
Yeah, I want to watch that scene again because, like, I like that. I like scenes where they're outside walking on the ship, and it's like, look at all that ship.
And
it's a big house.
I've noticed that we are seeing more and more of that. Obviously, on the original series and TNG, a lot of those you didn't see so much of that, and presumably that was partly a production limitation. You know, got to be expensive to pull that off and make it look not stupid.
Yeah, the animation one was weird, though, because that showed some cool alien stuff, but that didn't really show too much, because it might have been complex animation or something. As opposed
and also just the concept is very 3D, 4D or something. Maybe it's just something that didn't occur so much to people that people would be wandering around on outside of the spaceship. But ever since, first contact, we saw it. Enterprise, they did a little bit of it. Discovery, they were doing a bunch of that. And now here we have a whole bunch of Starfleet officers out, cleaning the graffiti off.
Yeah, I thought that was funny that they had time to just, graffiti their shit.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was an interesting mishmash of sort of various things. Mariner makes a comment about this, that the overall thrust of the main story is very kind of old school Star Trek in some ways, but then blended with the TNG style. In terms of, the old school Star Trek is the spears and the alien and like all that stuff.
Yeah. Because she's like, who am I, Kirk? Is this the 2260s? Yeah.
But then, well,
then another guy's like, Boimler was like, how did they get on here with these spears?
Yeah.
So that was like kind of.
It's like, we live on a spaceship. No, you're not dying from a spear wound.
Yeah.
That was one of the Mr. Mod aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Bolian. But then you have Ransom, who is on the one hand, he's doing this brilliant. The fight he did where it was all it was variations on the two-handed fist club thing that
they call pro wrestling, right. The double axe handle. It was just a complete double axe handle battle. That was like the ultimate one. It was kind of awesome. Like, he even looked a little greased up somehow. Yeah, it was weird.
It did look like it greased him up.
But they were both sexy. They were all like showing their showing how strong they are and how badass they are in battle. Both Mariner and Ransom.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting that name, Ransom.
Ransom, yeah. But even though he's fighting this guy, he's of course the whole time saying, I respect your sovereignty, and I wish to have a peaceful solution.
Yeah, and she's like getting a little turned on by his ethics.
Yeah, so drops the sword and refuses to fight with it. It's pretty cool.
When she was criticizing him, saying, you have a broad chest and all that, and then they were fighting. There was like some sexual tension there, and then instead of taking that further, he poked her in the foot with a sword.
Yeah.
And then there was the one later at the end of the episode when she was talking about when there was that whole roll the sleeves down thing. It's just funny because he gives her shit for not having rolled her sleeves down. It's a joke. But it's funny because she goes ape shit after that. Yeah. He's just like, another day, whatever, It's like, but I guess that's the
throws
joke. Yeah. But then after that.
She said, I will dance in your blood.
Yeah. That's when he got all like, hey. He like realized that he felt some, I don't know. I'm not saying that will necessarily be any kind of thing between them, but it was a funny sexual sort of tension.
You get the impression that they're in these first few episodes, they're laying the groundwork for things they could jump off on in the future. In the more modern serialized form of storytelling, that all is stuff that's at least in theory thought up somewhat in advance, and they have all these plans and things like that. But what you can do when it's more episodic, I think, is you can have moments like these where you drop them in there. And then you have the option of doing more with it in the future if the vibe is right.
So yeah, right.
Gives you a little more flexibility. That gives the writers a little bit more flexibility on how organically these relationships grow.
Yeah, that must be kind of nice to sort of throw out these ideas and sort of decide, well, we'll see if that pans out. If not, no big deal. Like, I know South Park, I think a few of their characters are like that. I'm thinking Scott Malkinson was probably one of those kinds of characters because he just came as this random like kid, who had a lisp and diabetes as his whole angle. And then he just started being in more episodes like a season later and stuff. So it's like you just throw it out there and there's no expectation to have to sort of do anything with it.
Yeah,
so.
Butters works out and then starts becoming almost a main character versus other characters that sort of wither and die.
Right. So she goes, next time I'm going to let somebody kill you. And he goes, I'm going to dance on your blood. And he goes, that was kind of hot. So he thought that was hot. I like the graffiti. They said the bark-hugging root smoochers. That's always fun. It's always fun when there's some kind of, alien kind of, saying thing. But it's funny is they just, why did they just throw so much graffiti? What was their goal? I guess to take over the ship? I don't know. Or just to cause mischief? I don't know.
It seemed almost more. It seemed like this alien race is more about clever mischief.
Yeah,
and you see that a little bit in their method of jurisprudence with the constitutional geode, the crystal. What was it called? The something geode?
Some kind of geode, but they described it as a constitutional crystal.
Yeah, it was the adjudication geode.
That's right, adjudication geode.
It was a special type of constitutional crystal we used to legally smoosh our criminals. So, a constitutional crystal. I think that's kind of funny. And That was that scene was funny because after he said that, there was just some random like worker guy who in the background, some old worker guy. He just goes, "Crystals,
crystals,
crystals."
It wasn't very crystal of us.
Yeah, right. It was.
And there's like the guy on the ship towards the end that the security guys are beating up, and he's all like, "Crystals."
Yeah, it's pretty clever.
I like that. I like that set. Spike, bump set, spike, volleyball thing Shax was doing to that. See, those are the kind of fight scenes that I think is kind of fun, but I can understand maybe if some people are put off by the level of ridiculous. It's like one guy just, in volleyball, he just does the bump and knocks the other guy up, and then like someone else sets it or something, or maybe there wasn't a set, but he spiked it after that, and there was like on a pile of...
For more details, go to volleyball.net.
Yeah, volleyball.net. Look up bumps and spikes.
Just do a Google search for bumps and spikes.
Bumps and spikes. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, here's a question for you though. We have two storylines going here. Mariner and Ransom is one storyline, and then we have what's going on the ship in terms of the captain. Captain Freeman is freaking out because she thinks the ship is being, is considered sort of a joke in Starfleet, and so she wants to get her people working harder. And as is unfortunately all too common with managers, she decides that she needs to micromanage and track everything Amazon style, with the obvious result being nobody's doing a good job anymore.
Like they brought that horny wood instead of the crystal, which started the whole problem to begin with.
So, but which one is the A story and which one's horny the B story?
Okay, that was tricky because, so first of all, I noticed that this one was like the first in that there was like panic on the ship, you know? Yeah. The first there was some infected, you know, that makes people like zombie-like, and they were like running around being crazy on the ship. This time there was panic on the ship because like, yeah, this was tricky because there was two reasons of panic. One was because they got overworked, and then of course the other is they got invaded, and everyone's just like total panic and mayhem is going on. That's funny. The thing that got them to fight good is she told them like, you know, you can have your buffer time back.
Yeah,
do whatever you want, and they're like, yeah, and then they start kicking ass, which is kind of funny. But so the A plot, both of them seemed so. Last week's one, the B plot was on the ship. Usually the B plot's on the ship. It seems like to me. And last week it was just the thing about Rutherford. Rutherford was going around trying to get different jobs. Wasn't that basically the same? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was basically it. So there was some pretty serious shit going on the ship, but that was like a result of also what happened on the away team as well. Mm-hmm. So I would guess that the time was the B story, but it intersected with the A story because it caused chaos that allowed those aliens to invade, and it caused the issue.
I mean, on the one hand, I respect the argument. It doesn't matter. It's just some meaningless label. I agree with that. But I do think it's interesting to try to flesh out what the writers are thinking, what they're focused on. I will say I was less engaged with the on-the-ship storyline than with the Mariner Ransom stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, that was the more interesting.
Oh, yeah. That was like a minor. That was almost like a C thing going on.
About Mariner's past, because she has all those scars, and she's like, I got this one here, and this one here, and this one in Scottsdale.
Yeah,
I don't know at what point people would say, oh, it's unfocused to have all these different things going on, but it was kind of neat that they all kind of were related. Like, because I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the story between her and Mariner, that was like a third thing that was going on. So then could you say, what, the time situation? Well, that was the name of the episode, dealing with time, but was, since the time situation caused all the shit to go wrong, I guess you could say that that's the A plot. So like the invading and the time stuff is all one thing.
It's also what sort of starts, the initial focus is all on the people working and being micromanaged with the timers.
Yeah. I agree with you though. What you say is like, I don't think that it necessarily has to be strict sort of demarcations, but I think that's useful to try to sort of explore that idea and see how it fits in, because you know a lot of things you can sort of find similarities with, and so just try to guess, have an open mind about, you know, it doesn't have to be a certain way or something.
And the whole situation on the ship, I think for me there was a lot of good stuff in there, and I really liked the message. I think it is an important message to give the professionals under your command a fair amount of latitude to do the tasks you pass along to them. I think that's true in really most industries to one degree or another. But certainly the way Starfleet has always been portrayed is these are all like really smart professional people, if they're even there. So they presumably will have the fortitude to be able to figure stuff out. Now, you do have your Lieutenant Barclays and stuff. It's not like there's Starfleet is devoid of people who need a little extra.
It took me a minute to remember. I was like, Barclays? Oh, yeah.
Trouble with Richard? What's that short track with the Tribbles?
Oh, yeah, with H. John Benjamin.
Yeah, the Trouble with H. John Benjamin. I can't remember now.
I'm going to find it.
You do have people in Starfleet who are do require some additional stuff. That's true of any workplace. You're going to have...
The Trouble with Edward.
The Trouble with Richard. I'm just thinking
fucking
of
asshole.
British kings. The Trouble with Charles. Is Charles in charge about, like, when King Charles... Never mind.
I think you're onto something, by the way,
But, yeah, I don't know. I was just, you know, that was just one line of thinking on that.
Was what?
I don't remember. I just Charles in charge.
King Charles?
We're talking about Tribbles.
Yeah, it was because I started humming the Charles in Charge theme song in my head, and it totally threw me off.
Yeah, that's cool. We can do what we will. Scott Baio, yeah. And he had that friend Buddy.
Right.
Unlike Seaver, Mike Seaver, who had that friend Boner.
Boner.
Who was Walter Koenig's son.
But the point being that the management, you know, clearly...
Oh, yeah.
I think the story was a little flat for me in the sense that it seemed kind of silly that this would be an issue on a Starfleet ship. And
I mean, even Scotty openly jokes about it in that TNG episode, you know.
So, I mean, I agree with
they don't have to stick to
I agree 100% with the message of the plot. I think that's great. I just think it was kind of, you know what I kept coming back to? I kept coming back to what could be a potential flaw, fatal flaw for the plot here is, wouldn't the senior officers know about buffer time since they were once junior officers? This is a quote unquote tradition. I don't think it's that new since we know Scotty did it and we know that concept has existed in the past.
That's a good point. Right?
So I don't know if it's just like a nitpicky thing, but I was just kind of like, yeah.
Right. It's like, they're not just going to forget just because like all of a sudden they're on the bridge and they're doing other stuff. Like,
but we do see that Captain Freeman, and this is another example where she tends to be very binary in her thinking. It's got to be like all or nothing, one direction or the other, because she goes...
I love that band! One Direction!
She goes all in on the you know, micromanaging and timing factor, and then as soon as she's convinced that was the wrong thing to do, she goes all in on the
other
do
side
whatever,
of
do
it.
Whatever the fuck you want. I couldn't give a shit.
Right.
Yeah, don't even try. See, at least the way that those plans work is that there's got to be a sense of like, okay, I have to, you know, maintain. I feel like maybe this is the wrong way to put it, but there has to be a little bit of fear, maybe, of thinking like, okay, we're getting away with this. Let's not ruin it.
Or a sense of pride.
Sense of pride is another way of sort of like saying you could fear like getting caught, or you could have pride for your work. I mean, I guess those are two ways of looking at it. But yeah, so it seems like you would definitely say to people like, you would hint at it around. You sort of imply that you would look the other way. You wouldn't outright. But you know, it's it really went on, and it allowed them to set up to that. That whole thing with him at the end, I like that they made. It was funny. It's a cheap joke, maybe, but it was funny that he's like, you know, super anal, and for the rest of time, no matter what he does, he's going to be known as this total slacker.
Yeah.
So he's kind of fucked. So that part.
But he was the only guy that like could keep up with all the like the timers and stuff.
Yeah.
Somehow. Like,
she was
like, this is great.
Freeman was all like 15 minutes behind. The whole month is screwed or whatever, you know, which is like, but he was just like, oh my God, I clean this graffiti. It's going to put me off schedule. You know,
well, the
so much graffiti.
A lot of this depends on what type of workplace you have. Right. So if you are in a factory or a similar situation or a service industry where the more you produce is a bit more profit or whatever you're looking for. Right. As horrible as it is, there is at least some sort of logic behind the idea of trying to maximize productivity. It's unfortunate when you don't take in the human and moral components of that when you're making those decisions and focus only on production. But But there is a twisted logic to it.
There is a relationship between output and, yeah, and sort of like...
But in a lot of other professional settings, income, and certainly in the Starfleet setting, there's no need for productivity in the sense there's only so much you can do in terms of maintaining the ship and doing the science and working in sick bay and things. What you want is you want a capable crew who is doing the work, they're accomplishing the tasks they're assigned well, but also that they're able to manage their energy levels, their health, their mental, you know, stuff.
They live on that shit.
So that when there is an emergency, they are primed and ready to go, right? So you don't want a bunch of slackers. You do want people who know what they're doing and are into doing what they're doing well, but you don't want to just push them until they're useless. I mean, obviously that's what was shown in this episode. And I guess, again, part of what was a little less engaging for me, I enjoyed all the component parts of that story. It was just overall, it's like, yeah, no shit. If you work people too hard, it's no good.
Yeah. Like you said on something like the Starship, it's not a direct relationship with more product produced, more income. It's not a direct relationship. I mean, I know it's probably slightly more complicated than that, but you know, that's the basics of making a product, right? With a ship, you just have to make sure it's running. Now, I guess the only reason to work people harder is if, as a captain, you're insecure about your own sort of like judgment, which it seemed like, I guess she was, because they just had that conference canceled. I'll dissing on the Cardassians. And the implication, obviously, is that, you know, she thinks that they're not choosing her because I mean, the ship is, from the start, you know, they say it's like a, you know, the B ship or whatever, you know, so.
The funniest joke in all of Starfleet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting how they have positioned Freeman as being, definitely having some insecurities and having some anger issues, which I guess we can see what influenced her daughter. They're framing her against Ransom, who is very optimistic. It's like in last week's episode when Rutherford was failing horribly in those holographic trials and Ransom was just all excited about helping him. And episode, he's all excited about, you know, telling Captain Freeman, no, maybe we're the funniest joke, you know, all the, you know, just whatever angle he could take, he was trying to take the positive angle. He did the same thing on the planet in a different way, of course, but, you know, when he was in prison.
I think, I did like, though, that it revealed more stuff about Ransom and that kind of situation. And it turns out he's not just a total two-dimensional putsy character and stuff. And then Vindor was good, where it's like, it's revealed at the end that those aliens, oh, I forget their name, but that like, they keep losing with this guy. Then they were talking about, like, I mean, we should get rid of the adjudication geode and get a death race with a crystal car. So yeah, and then when Vindor, he's all like, I like to read. That was really funny.
The whole scene was really well put together because they're setting Ransom up when they're in the cage, when he and Mariner are having that conversation, and she's asking to see his scars, and he says, you know, I don't have any. And she takes that, you know, she talks about how that means he hasn't ever put himself out there. He doesn't do the dirty work, right?
Is that what she meant when he said it's our group? She was saying, like, no, it's your group, meaning implying that he's trying to spread the responsibility out from less... Because there was one part where he goes, you know, this is our away team or whatever. And she's like, no, it's your away team. And so I'm guessing, I wasn't sure, like, what was being said there. But the best I could guess is that, like, instead of taking a leading role, he's sort of spreading responsibility out. And that goes to what you're saying about the scars, how she had all these scars and she would take control. And I guess she just never thought...
Well, I thought it was a whole... The scene had... There was a lot to unpack in that particular scene because we have seen this argument between people before in Star Trek about whether it should be the captain or commander who makes the sacrifice versus the loyal crew member who's going to protect the captain. We've seen both sides of it, right? Sometimes it's Riker who wins out saying he won't let Picard do something, or he does something to help protect Picard, or we might see the reverse where it's, no, the captain stays behind to blow up the bomb, you know, giving time for his crew to escape. And they've both been presented as the right answer, right? Mm-hmm. And here, they don't even resolve it, but they present those sides again, where both Mariner and Ransom, I think, from my perspective anyway, are making really good, reasonable arguments for why one or the other should be the one to sort of have the opportunity to take the sacrifice. And one thing it made me think of is, whichever side you're on, is it like a class thing? Like, do you think it's, is it like an upper class thing to be like, I'm the commander and I'm going to sacrifice myself for my team, or
yeah,
an ego thing? I don't know. There's a lot to think about there about how exactly to resolve that question about who would be appropriate to make the sacrifice.
And I agree. I think that goes along sort of like, yeah, with the note about, you know, him thinking of it as our away mission versus his away mission. Just, yeah, this idea, I didn't know what they were getting at. I could sort of come to conclusions on my own, but I didn't know. And I guess you're saying, though, do you think that's a good open interpretation to have where you didn't know, like, what their motivations are for wanting to be the one to fight the thing, you know? And even that alien guy's telling him, it's like, he's just going to chop you in half or whatever, you know?
There seem to be kind of a couple different levels here, because there's the first level, which is just the argument over the team aspect. And I think in that case, Ransom's argument is the stronger of them, because he's basically saying, you don't get that when we're doing this, we're all working together. Mm-hmm. We're all, like, equal.
Yeah, she's kind of a maverick.
And she's more about, you know, she's referring to her team, but her team is just other people of her rank. That's what she's associating with. She's creating this divide between her and the command structure for psychological reasons that have already been hinted at.
Part of that makes her, you know, attractive as a character in general, just to be like, wow, she's really confident, she knows what she wants, mm-hmm. and she's often right. But at the same time, it does still leave things open that she is flawed and mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe some point something's gonna, you know, like, people have made good points. Like, Boimler made good points with her previous episode, and like mm-hmm. you said, Ransom was making good points against her too. So I think the characters seem like, I like the characters pretty much so far.
Yeah, and they are definitely doing, it's episodic, right? You could jump right into this episode and enjoy it, but there are little things, little flavory chunks, little chunky flavor bits that they're dropping along the way. But then, you know, the next level in that cage scene is, first is the team stuff, and then it's that whole who should be responsible for volunteering themselves for the dangerous thing that could, in theory, help save the rest of their teammates.
Right, and they were both going for it.
And they're both going for it. Now, the third level, right, the third level is, in this case, both of them seemed very confident, right? Mariner wanted to do it because she said she's done stuff like this before, and she was confident that she could win. Ransom, likewise, he doesn't really talk about it, but you can tell from his behavior that he doesn't think necessarily that he's going to die in this case. He seems pretty sure he can go out and kick this guy's Vindor's ass, which he does.
So
that adds a weird other layer, because neither of them probably assume that they are sacrificing mm-hmm. themselves. So is it a more of an ego thing at that stage?
Right. Yeah. Once again, it was open ended a little bit like that. I think the thing with her is that it's always she presents like she doesn't care, obviously. And what's sort of being one of the themes, of course, is that she's doing all this shit to try to prove her worth. You know, like, for example, going first to attack it. Yes, she's confident and probably believes she can, but she feels compelled to do that. You know, violently compelled to do that. They both do, you know? And so, like you said, his motivation was probably just being, you know, like you said, cocky and didn't think he could lose and just like, you know, it's his ship. And hers is, there's, you know, of course she was rejected, right? And then she says she doesn't give a shit and screw the upper decks or whatever. But she definitely shows her actions, even though she's always like, you know, screw this place, I'm happy just here, I don't give a crap, you know, what she says. And then some of the actions she takes sort of hint that maybe, like, at some point there'll be some sort of her, like, having to face that somehow, I guess.
A comeuppance of some form or another.
Electro-net. The Galrakians electro-netted him with their crystal net.
The Galraki planet was cool. I thought it was sort of fun, all the crystal stuff.
Yeah.
The animation, they really did take advantage of
the design. Full force with the crystal idea. Like, it's like, I don't know what we're poking fun at, but we're sort of poking fun at Star Trek. Which is good. I liked it. I thought it was funny.
I'm digging on
some crystals. Their spears had funny crystals at the end.
And at the end of the episode, when the invading force had cleared off, and they showed some people just going around, like, collecting some spears, cleaning the graffiti, just picking up bundles of spears.
And they send, like, the other party down with, like, the crystal, and they get the right crystal this time and not the funny, dirty log, and, like, they're all happy. And it's like, oh, you guys are much better.
Yeah. Sorry about that whole, I did like that line, you know, it was very uncrystal of us to do that.
So they're always going through references in these shows. This one I was looking at some just kind of fun little I don't know if it was references to anything in specific, just kind of sort of eye winks. First of all, what was that field integrity tool that Boimler used when he was inside the brig when they were testing? Uh-huh. He was like testing.
He was like poking the force field.
Yeah, with this field integrity tool that like fucking knocked him across the room. Yeah. You know, what's the deal with that?
What's the deal with these field integrity tools?
Seems like you could do it some better way. You know, put on a stick, a wooden stick or something. You know, put on that wooden sex log. And they're talking about the upper deckers, they don't know how long it takes to balance a phase variance. Little things like that. Balance a phase variance. Then they had one about the impulse manifest needs to be degaussed. I had to do that with reel to reels. I remember when you got to degauss it to clear it off. So their impulse manifest had too many magnets, and I guess they needed to.
You had to do that on the old CRT cathode ray tube for the youngins out there. Oh, CRT monitors.
I forgot about that.
Wow. A lot of them would have a degaussing button or degaussing feature to get rid of the static electricity.
You'd hit it and go boom, and freak out for a second.
It's kind of fun.
Delta shift. Who's Delta shift? You know, what shift are they? Delta shift is the.
It implies that they're on a four shift rotation, which is I think the same as the Enterprise. Wasn't it? Was it okay? So correct me.
Which shift are they?
Remember in Chain of Command, right when the new captain came on, Jellicoe, who was an asshole to everybody, although he seemed to like also know what he was doing. I know he wanted to shift the crew rotations, and I can't remember if he wanted to shift from a four rotation to a three or a three rotation to a four. I just remember he was pissing off.
It was something like that.
Oh yeah, that was the one with that admiral came and was like,
he wasn't an admiral, he was a captain.
He was a captain, and Riker was immediately like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, everyone was like, fuck
that was
this
the
guy.
One when Picard
Worf liked him.
Of course, yeah. That's when Picard had to become put on the ninja gear, right?
Yes, exactly. He put on the ninja gear and got captured, and then they took the ninja gear off, and he was strung up naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've seen full frontal before in Star Trek for people who are complaining.
So the closest, we didn't see any Boimler nudity, but I guess the closest we got is when both a Mariner and
Ransom.
Ranch dressing. When they both took off their shirts, so that was not really the same. But, bio bed. She was like 5 hours.
Yeah.
She was totally going to say 5 minutes.
Totally.
It's like when people are like,
that's great.
392 seconds, more like 392 fortnights. And it's like, what? You know, when people do that joke where they take the number of the smaller thing, of the smaller unit, they're like, I think it should take about 13 hours. And like, 13 hours, more like 13 weeks. You know, and they use the same number, except they up the unit.
You know, could you provide a similar, I'm not quite getting it. Could you provide another example?
You know, when people say something like, oh, how long will it take to get here? It's like, oh, maybe like, you know, 15 minutes. And it's like, well, with traffic the way it is, it's more like 15 days. And sometimes they go too far with the units and it's stupid. And it's like
15 millennia.
Yeah, forever. Fuck you.
But like, you would hope that the chief medical officer would know like how to fix a bio bed and like about how long it would take.
Yeah, Dr. Katz.
That's what I'm saying, too. It's sort of
same deal.
But she sure could drop kick a motherfucker.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. She like referred to it, when she got the scratches, you want to take those gross scratches off. She's like, if you want to look like a friggin' scratching pad.
Yeah.
She did, didn't she?
Got bleeped.
And she's a cat, so it's extra funny because the scratch pad. I thought that was a funny little toot toot. Tootily doot.
Yeah. Like I was saying before, there were a lot of really good individual components. I like the fight scenes, the invasion force. Was amusing because of the whole spear thing. It was, again, stretching things a little that everyone was just sitting there working.
The funny triangle ships that all like latch.
I like the ships. The crystal ships that came out was kind of a cool design.
You mean like you were sort of weird how they were just trying to meet their quotas, and it wasn't until the captain was like, "You can do what you want," and that's when they kick ass. You know?
Yeah, I mean, people are like attacking them. They're like, "Oh, I'm still trying to work."
Yeah. I meant to mention this. I think it was last episode. It reminded me when Boimler was in the elevator right before Freeman came in. Mm-hmm. He was doing like a little dance. A little dance. And it reminded me of it was the power walk from last week. That was like, I meant to mention that was... Remember that time? That was awesome. Not say like, remember that time? It was awesome. But like, I thought it was funny. He's all like swaying his hips.
They are animating him in this funny, goofy style. He's very flexible and lithe. Mm. And you're right. He's always doing these little dances or funny little walks. I enjoy how they animate his character and his facial expressions at the end when Captain Freeman was explaining to him how the Boimler effect that described like the importance of slacking off and cutting corners. The look on his face was really kind of funny. The look of horror on his face.
And like the statue of him, and it's like with some great bird of the universe.
Oh, and that's,
that was an eagle.
One of the great birds.
Well, they call it the great bird of the galaxy because that's an Easter egg, because that's a nickname for Gene Roddenberry. He kind of went by the great bird of the galaxy.
Okay.
I did not know that.
Oh, now you know.
You're so full of trivia knowledge.
Gene and Roddenberry. I think it's
because I read the captain's log books in the Star Trek Encyclopedia.
Gene Roddenberry. You
know, I feel bad. I take that back. Saying somebody knows trivia implies that what they know is trivial, and I didn't mean that in any way. I meant to say, like, you've got a lot of knowledge of that stuff. You know,
you really know your stuff.
You got to put that knowledge. You know, you got the internet. And
girls go to college to get more knowledge, and boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider.
Yeah.
Some girl told
what
me
if you were like some
school.
Science lab on one of the moons of Jupiter?
Yeah,
I mean, that ain't stupider.
Maybe they. That's a good point.
yeah, the logic of that particular rhyme is questionable.
Get more stupider.
Yeah, or not even that. Part. I mean, just couldn't they go to someplace other than Jupiter to get more stupider?
Yeah, there's lots of places, but you know,
yeah,
get more knowledge.
I think you'd either get stupider or you'd get more stupid. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever you become is what rhymes with the name of that thing you're going to. So
now everyone's thinking of rhymes.
If you want to be famous, you got to go to Uranus.
Yeah, that's good.
That doesn't really rhyme exactly. But.
Yeah.
If you want to watch cartoon, you go to the moon.
Yeah, better.
If you want to get a bat turd, you just go to Saturn.
Yeah, well, a bat turd.
Maybe a slant rhyme? I don't know what you call that.
Some kind of slanted something.
Mm.
You just gotta, it's all in the way you present it. That's how you make
it's
it.
It's all
sound
the way and you use
it's all,
it.
It's all in the delivery.
Yeah. So yeah, there was the O'Brien thing. That was pretty clever.
Yeah.
Right? That was pretty funny. The TNG era O'Brien.
TNG O'Brien, right.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. It wasn't even an Easter egg. That was just a great Star Trek joke, but
yeah, it was like
it works because it's both a joke and not a joke,
right? Exactly.
The argument is a good, you could argue that Miles O'Brien is the epitome of Star Trek, of Starfleet.
Yeah, and it's just so in your face with it. It's one of those moments of appreciation. I appreciate
that. He's been in
the
most episodes.
Has he?
No, Worf has been in the most episodes.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Yeah, he's been in the second most episodes.
Yeah.
He's got that comic that guy draws on the internet of like O'Brien. He's always in the
Chief O'Brien at work is a brilliant, if often depressing.
Yeah, his face always looks so
awesome. It's pretty great, yeah.
It's pretty
and
nice.
This statue of him evoked that because it has him standing at his control panel from Transporter Room 3.
Nah.
Which, as we all know, because
that's his favorite.
Picard, at least Picard thinks it's his favorite. Right. I still maintain that when Chief O'Brien left for Deep Space Nine and Picard said, "This is your favorite transporter room," I still maintain that at that moment Chief O'Brien was like, "You know what? Fuck this guy."
Right.
It's
like if he's like, "Oh, this is your favorite screwdriver to use." It's like, no, this is the screwdriver that I have to use. Like, it's my fucking job, asshole.
Mike McMahon, in an interview, the creator of this of Lower Decks, Mike McMahon said that, referring to the Miles O'Brien joke, he said that of all the characters in Star Trek, we have the most complete arc with Miles O'Brien because we see him as a more junior officer rise through the ranks.
Riza through the ranks.
We see him.
You
as
get
a,
it, Riza?
Yeah.
Okay.
We all got it.
Like a penile erection.
No, like a Riza where you go on the planet and have sex with people.
Yeah.
The Riza planet.
Yeah. And Riza, like my penis, it a Riza.
Yeah, like that. You know? Too. It's both.
It a Riza. Jamaharan.
yep.
But with O'Brien, we've seen him as a single man. We see him meet his wife and get married.
Everyone's so mean. Keiko. Everyone's so mean to Keiko.
We see him have two
Who's
children.
Mean to Keiko?
The audience.
Oh.
At the end of Deep Space Nine, he becomes a professor at Starfleet Academy, which he never attended because he's an enlisted.
Right. He was
an
enlisted man. Yeah. Right.
There was an error.
So he didn't have to go to that stupid convention that Picard had to go to that they couldn't get to because they were stuck in a they were stuck in a time loop for that episode. No, they were
that was more of a like a higher level.
That was when O'Brien said like I don't have to go to this shit because I'm enlisted.
Wasn't that when Data's having dreams?
Yeah, Wow, I can't believe I'm forgetting. I need some B12.
Yeah. Get yourself a lot of
B12. Ginkgo biloba.
Yeah. I think, sure, it was that. Interlocked hands. That's what he was saying when he was hitting him with the... I totally interrupted you.
I don't recall what
I was were we even talking about?
Yeah. It couldn't have been that interesting.
It's got forgetfulness.
What if it was like super fucking interesting?
It's got short-term memory problems.
We were talking about the Miles stuff, and we had concluded
the main points of it,
yeah, which is that Miles O'Brien really does represent the fullest picture of a Starfleet person. Interestingly enough, you know, he's a non-commissioned officer. He's an officer in the sense that he's the chief of whatever at a given time. But what's also interesting to consider is with this whole buffer time thing.
Buffer time.
It was a joke largely based off of Scotty, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the Scotty style of doing things. You always multiply the estimate of how long it will take, and then you'll look like a miracle worker. Right?
It always made me wonder about Geordi too, because you know, it's just maybe that's sort of standard practice for.
But Geordi rejected.
Yeah, Geordi. There was that episode where Geordi meets Scotty, right?
Because there's that. Yeah,
and he gets sort of annoyed at Scotty because Scotty's doing all this haphazard stuff, like just stick these wires in there.
I think Geordi's up to something though.
He might be up to something, but
I was
going to comment that with O'Brien and Geordi in their engineer positions and on Deep Space Nine and on TNG, you tended to, you know, if Geordi said something was going to take 2 hours, you figured it would take 2 hours. He would be able to do it faster, but that would be because of like luck and stress and stuff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that he was overestimating necessarily. That's certainly the impression I got with Geordi.
That's because that's what he wanted you to
think. And I think O'Brien was also pretty, you know, he was like good with like trying to give good estimates.
When O'Brien was on DS9, you know, and he's always fixing some system, when he had to keep fixing those broken ass systems, he was essentially a computer programmer, basically, mixed with a mechanic, you know.
Yeah.
But he was basically, he was just like programming all those things, you know.
Clicking and clacking.
Some kind
of. But he also hit things a lot.
He did hit things to get them to work, but that's just for the cameras. He did that.
And he rolled up his sleeves a lot like Mariner.
Yeah.
He would be like crawling around some conduits.
Yeah, some Cardassian conduits. I think you'd be forgiven for crawling around a Cardassian combo knit.
Cardassian flavored
with
combos.
Your shelves rolled up to your elbows.
Do you think Cardassians have, what's their snacky food? Do you think it's fishy? Is it fishy?
I was thinking that it probably is. Well, they look like lizardy, so I would imagine it's fishy.
I don't know.
I think a bug's more like Klingons.
Maybe kimchi-ish?
I bet it's
like
fishy. I bet it's some kind of dried prawny thing.
Mm, just like gobbling up a bunch of dried prawny things.
And they probably have a lot of eyeballs or something. And
do you think the Cardassians do a thing where like eyeballs, as a gag, they like lean their head back and they put some of those dried prawny things in their spoon head spot? And they do
and
some
like rolls
of,
down.
Yeah, they do some game where they have to take shots of Kanar while like not spilling their heaping teaspoonful of shrimp bits.
Some of those dudes got a whole tablespoon.
is that the basis of like racial discrimination on Cardassia? Is like how deep your spoon hole is?
I mean, yeah, that word, that spoonhead, it the way it's said, it sounds it's so sharp and with such malice.
Is a deeper spoon better?
It feels
or worse?
It feels like painful, you know.
I want to know, do the upper classes of Cardassia get surgery to deepen their spoon hole or to like smooth it out?
I'm sure I don't
shallow.
Know, because that's a good question. You never know which is going to be.
Maybe they will address it on a future episode of Lower Decks or Discovery.
I mean, do they want to look more human? No, probably not.
No, not to smooth it out, but maybe to shallow it out. I don't know. But probably deeper. I would probably lean more. They would be.
You think they'd put some kind of jewel up on that thing or something?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that would be a good place for a jewel.
Some sort of ornament.
Sometimes they have them. They have makeup in there.
Do you ever think that you could take a lever and put it in one of the Klingons' ridges and like pop one of its ridges?
What the fuck?
I always kept looking at Worf and wondering I could pop one of those things.
Horrifying.
Yeah, I know. It was one cool. Like, it ooged me out.
No wonder Klingons are always paranoid about humans.
Yeah.
Because humans come up with some crazy fucked up shit.
We didn't get any Billups this episode. Where was Billups?
He was seen just briefly in the teaser.
Is this a thing where one season, where one day we're going to get a Billups episode, or and then will we get to know Billups more, or will that be an episode where he disappears or something?
Yeah, probably to an extent, but since this show is focused on these four main characters who are the lower ranked people, I think all the people, Ransom, Billups, Captain Freeman, we will see a lot of them, but always in service of the story and characterization for the four main characters.
I agree with that. I was thinking, though, with what they did with this Ransom character in this episode, I know, like you said, it's serial, so they can choose, pick and choose what they want to follow through with, but it did seem like there was potential to get, like, no, mm-hmm. like, not every episode, but maybe every once in a while you learn a little bit more about...
I'm sure, because they've also set it up so that the
because it was a pretty deep episode with him relative to the first two.
The setup is clearly, we have this, the main characters, and then each of the main characters is associated with these secondary characters that we've learned about, because Tendi is associated with Chief Medical Officer Ta'ana, and Billups is associated with Rutherford, right? Mm-hmm. And both Boimler and Mariner have these associations with the command structure, with chiefly with Ransom and Captain Freeman, and with Mariner having Captain Freeman as the mom action, which they've only touched briefly on. It's interesting. I wonder how often we'll see it come up and what direction that the fact that they have that peculiar relationship is. It's like, you know, being a student at the school where your mom is like the principal.
Shax?
Say what?
Shax.
Yeah, Shax is just sort of there. I don't know, in terms of who he's associated with.
Let's start listing characters.
Yeah, just start naming names. Shax seems to be a little bit more of the everyman character. That's not really what I mean, but you know, he interacts with everybody in some sense or another. And I like that, again, in this episode, he referred to Ensign. He was like, oh, you're that huffy Ensign. And then he called him Ensign Bremler.
Yeah, I like that you call him huffy.
But the running joke, it's an old joke, it's a simple joke, but the running joke that so many of these people can't remember Boimler's name is it works well here, because Boimler wants to make a name for himself. The problem is he's trying to make a name for himself by following all the rules to a T and just doing everything perfectly, which is great on the one hand in theory, but all the other people who are getting noticed partly because they're stepping outside of the lines. And that is, for better or worse, that can be very true, that by stepping, including Ransom, what he was doing in this episode, you know, you step out of the lines and it brings attention to you.
Right. That's definitely what holds people back is I've seen, you know, just you witness it. And,
yeah, I've seen it a thousand times before.
Where people, you know, they're trying too hard to fit in and be like the good boy because they want, you know, to be thought of. Looked upon fondly, and they don't want to cause a stir. Well, sometimes you got to cause a little bit of a stir. Now, with Boimler, was he able to effectively get his message across about bringing back buffer time because he's normally so, you know, he follows the rules? I don't know. They didn't really give any indication one way or the other on that. But I'm wondering, like, you know, if Rutherford came by, I don't know. They didn't really give an indication of, you know, how much by following the rules do you earn, like, respect when you finally do want to go crazy?
So I guess in this case, Boimler following the rules, and also not only following the rules, but having a psychological makeup where the previous scenario actually caused him more anxiety than being micromanaged.
Yeah.
Being micromanaged, he liked, because I've mentioned before, when you're in Boy Scouts or something and you have that, like, super clearly delineated set of accomplishments, you do this, 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 and this, and now you're good. You move up in rank, and that's your job. And he's comfortable in that scenario. So because he was comfortable in that scenario, he didn't succumb to the stresses that everyone else did. So him following the rules is what led him to be in the position, above even the captain in this case, to see that there was this problem. He could recognize the problem. And it was good growth for his character.
Yeah, that's true. He's the only one that really held his shit together.
He held his shit together partly because, this is my interpretation, was that he was way more comfortable with the whole new system. He liked it, and he was flourishing in the
really
new system.
Liked it.
But most people weren't. As he put it, he said, not everyone's a Boimler.
Looks like they sometimes only had like 40 seconds to do something. Like,
yeah. Yeah, right? It looked really fucking stressful.
They're lucky they got 60 seconds.
They did really convey accurately and very well the stress of being with the transition with that clock. It was almost like Vertigo or something, where you're like, this
and oppressive
clock.
There were clocks like on every panel, like in the ship.
Yeah. There's a problem with those reprogrammable panels on the walls.
Reprogrammable panels on the walls. Swords and spears. Swords and spears.
Swords and spears is right.
That was fucked up when she told that guard. She was like,
whatever you be, whatever you are.
Yeah. Or something like, are you proud of that or whatever?
Yeah. And he was like, yes.
Yeah.
It's like, is this what you wanted to do when you were a kid? You wanted to grow up and just keep people in cages?
He goes, are you fulfilled by that? She goes,
yes. Well, and Mariner makes that mistake. I mean, she's portrayed as being having some problems when it comes to dealing with other people. So it fits with her character.
I like at the end of the first episode when she does that, she does like a dance, but you don't see below her knees. You just see her. It's the very end of the first episode at the bar when she's, you know, she's all cheering. She had her hand up and she's all doing some. I like that dance where the people just squat up and down. You know what I'm talking about? There's a scene in Community where Annie is like excited because like Abed and Troy are like helping her move or something. And then they start singing or something and she starts just bouncing up and down. Like, not in like, it's not a sexual thing. It's just,
I was
going to
ask
like,
if that's
it's
your
not,
kink. Is that a kink?
No, it's not. It's just.
How do you search for that kink?
It's not like because things are bouncing. It's when you see above the knees. So you don't see the knees bend.
So yeah, okay. Just for clarification.
They're not wearing anything weird or
do you
anything.
Not, do you see the knees but not see them bend? Or you do you not see the knees because of the framing of the camera? Or an obstacle in front of them.
There's a framing of the camera. Yeah, you don't really see.
So you see them from the knees up, but they're bouncing up and down.
Like by the knees. You know, really, they're not like jumping. They're not even really jumping. They're just bouncing by the knees, but you don't really see the knees. So you see them move up, and they, especially when they clap their hands, it's like, yay! It seems like they're so happy.
I will take it as a given that this is not a kink of yours.
I don't think it is.
But I am still curious into how we could shorten this description into a Google searchable phrase.
Yeah, you'd have to see the episode. It's Community where Annie's moving out of her shitty apartment. I think she might, I don't know if she's moving in with them in this episode or a different one. But that's also kind of what Mariner did at the end of the first one.
I was going to say, I could just watch the pilot episode of Lower Decks.
Yeah.
And get that as well.
Yeah, I think she moves in with them.
Yeah, at some point she
eventually
does.
She
no,
does.
I think that's when she does.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay. I think maybe that's when Pierce came in and was all like, I'll give you money if you're cool or something.
It's got Community.
Community. It's a good show.
It is a great show.
I didn't even get into it. It took me forever to get into it.
I think that was true for a lot of people. But
I was one of those assholes.
You were one of those pieces of shit assholes.
I know.
Anything else on this particular episode?
I like the scene. I like when they'd actually cut to him a week later and everyone was freaking out. I thought that was a good sort of cut. It was predictable, you know, but it was just satisfying. Oh, yeah.
Well put together. Well portrayed.
I like, this is another one of these examples of things they say, purge the calibration matrix. It's like, what does that mean? It's purge the calibration matrix.
And then that's another point when Boimler is being all lithe and cute when he's purging. He's doing the
little yeah.
He's like, he's like singing a little tune.
Then he goes, then our Ransom is going, talking about random. Horned Gorilla's Sentient Tar, which is like, I guess that's like the TNG episode.
Yeah, Sentient Tar. Oh, I didn't catch that. That's good.
I didn't
the Sentient Tar got Lieutenant Yar.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
And then he was talking about spores that basically make you have sex with your best friend's sister, which was, you know, a funny sort of play on the rootin' tootin' commander captain guy. Is he supposed, I mean, how much of Riker is he supposed to be or at all? You know, I mean, it seems like, of course, it's easy to draw parallels, obviously.
Well, they're squishing
together.
But
he's got some Kirk in him.
I guess it's not equal parts, but there's some Riker in there in terms of the sort of suaveness. There's some Kirk in there. Riker himself was modeled off after Kirk a little bit. I think a lot of it is just general stereotypes of the strong man, you know, like in Futurama or something, you know, you got like the broad-shouldered ego guy. Mm-hmm. But
Zap Brannigan.
Yeah, like Zap Brannigan. But I suspect highly, and I think we already see evidence of this throughout the first three episodes, particularly in this episode, that he's not going to match up to all the stereotypes.
Right. Not
exactly.
Perfectly.
Right. And even, you know, Mariner incorrectly stereotypes him at that one point where she again claims that he has no scars because he doesn't actually do the dirty work, and then he proceeds to go out and do the dirty work.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising.
And you find out the reason he has no scars, the impression you get is that he's so good, he's such a badass that he just doesn't lose.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. But then, of course, also, like, there was that reveal that Vindor, they don't seem to do well with Vindor fighting people.
Yeah. Vindor's heart is not in it because he's been reading about proper jurisprudence.
Yeah.
With the judges and jury. He was about to say jury before the head alien guy said, get the crystal car for a death race.
Yeah, crystal car.
Crystal death race.
Oh, yeah, this is another one of the things that I keep bringing up, and it never gets a reaction because I guess I should just get over it. This isn't one of those situations. It wasn't, that's an order. You know, sometimes I bring up times where people are like, kiss me on the food face. Kiss me on the food, the pie hole. Kiss me on the pie hole. That's an order.
Kiss me on the food face.
Or they're like, go leave me here.
That's some like sexual harassment.
Yeah, you're right. That wasn't a great example. They don't really have that in Star Trek.
I was like, Captain Picard's like, Beverly.
But just imagine if
I'm ordering you to kiss me on the pie hole.
Just imagine if that was romantic somehow.
I like savory pies.
eel
pie, a London delicacy.
Okay, when they're like, throw a fireball at my head and stab me in the butt and throw me off the cliff. That's an order. Captain, no, I won't leave you. That's an order. That kind of deal.
Wait, what did they stab in the butt?
You know when shows, science fiction shows, where there's a ship and like the captain orders somebody, those science fiction shows.
No, I get all that. I just am curious. I didn't catch what was being put into the person's butt.
It didn't matter. That's beside the point. Just like a sword or something.
Pound me in the food face.
It's basically when the higher ranking officer tells the other one to leave him or her behind and to basically, throw him off a cliff, leave me here, save yourself. And they're like, no, I won't leave you. And they go, that's an order, ensign. And they're like, fuck.
Fuck you, old man. Yeah. I'm taking you home.
It's like, what, are you going to court-martial me later? So, and when they say that's an order thing, they throw that around a lot in sci-fi. But this was a different one. This was which is less egregious. Once again, maybe I just need to get over it. They did the permission to speak freely thing. But that kind of fit in because the answer was like, no, there's no point in telling.
In this case, it was a characterization.
Yeah, it's like you wouldn't listen anyway, so.
Yeah, I find that very interesting, the concept of the permission to speak freely, because it's generally speaking in the history of Trek, when you see something like that, it's you usually know somebody's about to lay down some shit, because all the officers seem to speak freely anyway. They only ever say that if they're about to be like, I disagree with you, Captain, you're being crazy. Or whatever.
Yeah. So what happens if you speak too freely? Can the captain still can probably be like, you motherfucker.
Yeah. What if you ask for permission to speak freely and then they give you that permission and you're all like, I want to suck your dick.
Yeah. Yeah. What happens
then? And then are they like, you're getting in trouble. You're like, but she gave me permission.
Yeah. I can say whatever freely. I want. You said.
I just want to take it out and look at it.
You said it.
You don't have to do it. I'm just asking.
Yeah, you said it was okay if I asked, whatever. Promise you won't get mad? Sorry, that's a tangent. I'm going off the rails here. Bark hugging root smoochers.
Yeah, I did like that. I like that line. As with the previous two episodes, there were a lot of good lines here and out. And
double axe handle fight.
There was great Star Trek references. Great jokes on Star Trek references. And the good part, though, is it's not 100% reliant on those references because, the bark hugging, root smoochers is a good example of they that's a joke that works in the context of this particular episode, overall, a good job. I was, again, a little less engaged in that, the on ship story compared to the previous two episodes. But the Mariner and Ransom stuff for me kind of stood out.
They mentioned benzites. They haven't mentioned benzites in this show yet, I don't think.
We saw a benzite. They're the ones, I believe, with the mouth thing. Yeah. The guy who's hanging out with Wesley at that time.
Oh,
at
yeah. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, and he was kind of an uptight rule follower kind of thing. I wonder if I don't know if that was just that character from that TNG episode that was like that, or if that's a benzite trait, but it would be interesting if Boimler kind of gets annoyed at benzites because they have a similar personality to him in terms of being all serious about, like, oh, this is what we're supposed to do.
That's always classic scenario. So, those benzites, right? You know what they need to chill out? You know what they need to chill out?
Oh, no.
Some benzos.
Not bad. It kind of works. Kind of.
Some benzos. They need that to chill. Yeah.
Benzodiazepine.
Benzodiazepine. To chill their butts out.
Yeah. Don't mess with that stuff, kids. Stick to like the illegal drugs. They're safer.
Yeah.
Some of them, anyway. Not all of them.
Most of them.
All right. Well, I think that'll probably just about do it for us this
week. It's got an ending.
It's got an ending. It's got Star Trek. As per usual, this is the portion of the show where we do our best to convey to you.
Do your best.
How you can communicate with
the
us
best.
And provide us input on these conversations and discussions.
Because it's the finest of the flavors. That song drives me. I, if I'm alone, I'll just like obsessively say over and over again, it's the finest of the flavors. It's the finest of the flavors.
What's that?
It's the finest of the flavors. It's that Bare Naked Ladies song.
Yes, it is.
From American Pie. It's the finest of the flavors. I'll just walk around saying that, and it gets like really compulsive that I have to keep saying it more, and I'm like, oh, I can't say it as much as I want. And then
those
I have
to, guys
like, stop.
Are really weird.
This is legitimately upsetting.
I don't even like that
song. I'm very concerned about you.
I don't. I mean, Bare Naked Ladies are doing their thing. Good for them. I'm happy for them. They're just not really, I'm not into
apparently
it,
one thing they're doing is infecting your brain.
Yeah, so
I mean, this is many years later.
Yeah,
you probably haven't actually heard the song in a long time.
It's been a long time. It's been
it's
2 years. It's the finest of the flavors. A booby dooby dooby doop doop. A dooby doop doop. Because it's the finest of the flavors. It's the finest of the flavors. It's the finest of the flavors.
It's that time of the night when Dan has gone insane. Or is losing composure, but that's okay. That's okay. This is the perfect timing for it.
Losing composure, like
so.
I remember once you told me I was being recalcitrant.
You probably were.
Yeah, I'm sure I was. just being disagreeable.
It's like you're being recalcitrant. So okay, yeah. But if you want to get in contact with us, Dan can help us out with some stuff with the contact information.
It's been feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. That's the email that you can reach us at.
And look for us on Twitter or Instagram.
Okay.
You say this is what it is, at itsgotstartrek. And then Facebook, you just type in It's Got Star Trek.
Yeah, just type in It's Got Star Trek. You'll find us. You'll see us roaming around on the Facebook.
Make sure you put in the apostrophe, though, or else you'll get that other podcast.
Yeah, you don't want to hang out with those guys. They're a bunch of misogynists.
Yeah.
I suspect that they are white supremacists, which is morally wrong.
Yep.
And
were those the people that were giving us shit for having the apostrophe?
No. Dan and I were riffing. We're just kind of. It was a riff thing. The person who mentioned the apostrophe was a very kind person who complimented the podcast and made the comment, unknowingly, errantly making the comment that we should not have an apostrophe in the "its" because she was making the error in thinking we were saying like. It's like what the contraction is. It has got Star Trek.
Right.
It's got Star Trek. It has got Star Trek. So thus the apostrophe is required. It is not a possessive.
Right.
It's got Star Trek wouldn't make any sense because what is the it?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What is the
exactly.
it?
Is it the internet? It and anyway, it's got
Star Trek. And how does it have a got Star Trek?
Yeah. What is a got Star Trek?
What is it?
It's
internet has Star Trek.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And, so anyway, it was well-intentioned and, corrected her politely and she accepted that correction and is no doubt currently listening and appreciating the show because she just loves the show.
So it was really no problem at all.
Yeah. It was no problem at all. Like you're like, oh, those fucking assholes.
It's all good.
Mildly criticized us. No, there are plenty of assholes out there, but we couldn't care
Not
less.
Not this person.
Yeah. This particular person was the opposite. You know, you care about right. the people who are engaging with the show in a positive, constructive manner, even if their constructive criticisms are demonstrably wrong. That's just the way it works.
Yeah. Interlocked hands,
that's right.
It's so the other guys think I'm strong and dumb, but I'm not. I love to read. And he smiles when he says read. That was funny.
That was funny. All right, so yeah, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com, at itsgotstartrek on the various relevant social medias, Facebook and all that. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us at www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Food face.
All sorts of stuff on our website that
food
you can
bucket.
Check out.
Food bucket.
And otherwise, that's gonna be all
family feedback.
All their feedback. All she wrote from us this week. So we hope you have a pleasant rest of the week, and you'll hear from us the same time next Saturday. So look forward to that.
You better look forward to that.
Woo-hoo!
Interlocked hands!
Stop! I submit!
I thought you only said Vindor.
It's so the other guys think I'm strong and dumb, but I'm not. I love to read!